Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am recording from my nephew's room in Bishop, California.
Ah, nice. Well, I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I'm in my studio where David normally is. But he's not today,
for many reasons.
Because I'm ill, but we're still bringing you the show. We brought you a show on Christmas, for God's sakes, and now we're doing one after the first of the last three bowl games for the Pac-12. And I tested positive for COVID when I came back from my Christmas break, so I'm here in isolation by myself in the studio, not feeling wonderful. But we got to bring you the show. The show must go on, is what they say, David. So we are here.
Must go on.
So together, even in sickness, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football, at least for two more games, maybe three. And then we know, then who knows after that. But we got three days in a row of Pac-12 football. And yesterday we got a morning game. So it started like 11 a.m. So if you're going to be on the couch, like just sort of this drinking tea and eating soup, having Pac-12 football on TV does help. It was therapeutic, I think, David.
I can't see any reason why Oregon State versus Notre Dame was therapeutic in any way, except for the fact that you picked it one way and I picked it the other way.
Yes.
And that would be the only thing that you would have positive feelings about that.
Cheers. That was good. If you have questions or comments, we have a few questions to get to. I told David I'm not really reading that well on the screen right now, so he might have to read them. We got a few. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast, and if you have that Apple podcasting app on your iPhone, your iPad, whatever, please leave us a 5-star review and say something funny. We would love to read it. If you leave us 5 stars, we'll read almost whatever you say on there, and follow us over there. And if you're watching us live on our YouTube channel, we are streaming this live. I don't know why you want to see me. David said you have sick eyes. I'm like, thanks. But yeah, you want to follow us on our sick eyes here on the YouTube channel. Thank you for watching the stream. And please hit the like button over there. Like and subscribe. We appreciate that very much.
Yeah, I'm putting a poll in the chat right now. Does Ryan have sick eyes?
Thanks.
If you could, please get in there and click yes or no. Ooh, we got breaking news in the chat.
Oh.
From Scott.
Let me put that up there.
Yeah, it's a super chat.
Hold on. That's a... maybe that one's turned off.
What'd you do?
Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to do this. Hold on. I'll put it up here and let you... I'm trying to...
Anyway, Scott has super chatted us. Thank you very much, Scott. He says, Happy New Year. Happy new conferences. Very generous of you. Whoa, what are you doing over there?
I'm playing with my board that's not working right now.
Good God. I was trying to get breaking news going, and he can't.
No, it's a cha-ching.
Is that a Puma jacket?
It is a Puma jacket, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I don't see many Pumas out in the wild these days.
No?
No, not too many Pumas.
Oh, someone turned it down. There we go.
There we go.
Who's messing with my board?
Who would do that?
I don't know. Chris Trevino was here for the, they did a 5-hour composite 2-star recruits podcast on signing day. 5-hour live podcast. Claim.
That's insane. That's stupid. How much super chat money did they make from that?
Not as much as they did. The first one they did, they got like $700. Remember that? Like they had a couple $100 donations. I think this was like the $100 or $200 range. It was kind of more normal.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
But thank you, Scott.
That was very generous.
Happy New Year to you as well. Did we get any reviews?
No, we have no new reviews.
Okay.
Zero. I would say people are generally failing at many things this holiday season. You know, it's seasonal affective disorder season. And I think our listenership, along with many people throughout the world, are feeling down. And that's the only explanation I can provide for why they aren't leaving positive reviews for our show. Clearly, quality is still very, very high.
Very.
And it's just, yeah, I blame the listeners. It's like a football program, for example, blaming its fans.
Yes.
You know, I blame the listeners. Certainly has nothing to do with anything else, any other external factors.
We did a show on freaking Christmas Day, people.
We did a Christmas morning show.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So leave us a goddamn review.
And apparently,
now Scott left us a review in the best possible form, which is money. We like
that. Yeah, that's way better. Super chats are better. Why don't we don't ask for super chats, but we ask for reviews because those are free.
We've got 19 votes, and the results are in. Does Ryan have sick eyes? Yes, overwhelming. 89% say
yikes.
Yes.
Yikes. Yeah. That's crazy. 89%. Yeah. Percentages are kind of weird. Like, did you ever get those, you know, when you're watching a game and they give you the – I don't know what the stats are, but they give you, like, the percentage to win. Is it FPI? Or what are those things? You know, you're watching a game and they say
– Yeah, the ESPN score predictor.
Yeah, the score predictor, you know.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, this team's 99% to win, and then they lose. I kind of feel like I experienced that myself when I was down like 7 games to you in our pick contest, and now we are tied. How do you like that for a segue? Sicky segue. Yeah, man. My ball picks are doing good. I'm 4-2 over at my bookie, making a comeback. So make sure you go check out my bookie. They've been great to us over the last several years. I've been putting every single pick I talk about here on the show, I bet it over on my bookie. So far through bowl season, David is 1-5 and I'm 4-2. So making a comeback. We are both now 10 games over 500. Whatever his lead was, I think it was like a 7-game lead. It is gone. It is evaporated. It is over. We are tied in our pick contest with only 2 games, potentially 3 left. And I've been so happy that I've been doing my picks over at my bookie. They've been great to us. I have a lot of fun doing it. So it's fun when we take these picks kind of seriously because we talk about it all the time and it really doesn't mean anything. But, you know, I put a little money on it and it kind of gives me a little more juice. But I'm very happy about it. So make sure you check out the site every day during the holidays as they're giving away boosted bets, free bets, and a lot more. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere over at my bookie.
Beautiful read. I mean, to do that when you're sick, I mean, that's just the mark of a true professional.
I do my best. I do what I can. But, yeah, it's unbelievable we are tied now. Can you believe
it? I mean, I believe it. I called after – I think it was after the first or second bowl game. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to pick a single one of these correctly. And amazingly enough, I did pick one correctly.
But it was not good for a while.
No. They absolutely should have lost that game, but they won by 14, and that's all that matters.
Well, you know, you can rely on like six turnovers every game, right? Like,
No, it's definitely replicable. But I do remember you making that argument to me last year when USC was generating like just a stupid turnover thing. You're like, well, this is a mark of a good defense. No, it's luck. And what happened this year? The luck turned.
They did turn.
You cannot replicate turnovers.
Donna says, love this podcast. We'll miss you both. Happy New Year. We're not going away. We're going to still do the podcast. We're going to still talk about the same 12 idiotic teams that we talk about next year.
Don't read too much into it. Maybe Donna's going away. You don't know. Maybe Donna's heading to prison after this. You don't know.
Right? I hope not. Yeah.
I mean, we really hope not, Donna. You seem amazing, but you have no idea.
West Texas Mike said he muted Pop-Tarts on Twitter. I didn't really watch much of that game, but I love Pop-Tarts. I don't eat them very often.
There are two things on Twitter that are just sending me the last few days. One of them is every little communion-related Pop-Tarts tweet where it's like, this is my body. This is, you know, like, eat of my body. And then the other one was the Moneyball crossed with Lord of the Rings tweets. Did you follow this?
No.
It was like somebody making fun of like Elrond putting his team together and it's four hobbits and like just all these like, you know, tweets about it. And then somebody did it with like the Moneyball like image of Brad Pitt and Moneyball. Like he's putting his team together with like budget.
Yes.
But just everybody doing like memes upon memes upon memes of Moneyball quotes, but with all of the Lord of the Rings stuff transposed. Like, we're going to replace Saruman, but we're going to replace him in the aggregate with four hobbits. It was all really good.
That's nice.
You got to be there. You have to be there.
Yeah, sure. I gotta check it out. But it was cool. Like, they're basically the live Pop-Tart mascot going into like a firework laden toaster and then a real Pop-Tart comes out and they eat it. And I, you know, like Lincoln Riley got doused with eggnog and like, all right, I don't know. I don't know what that was associated with the Holiday Bowl, but like having, you know, the mayo thing, I don't really like. I don't think you can pour mayo. I don't know if they watered it down or whatever, but Pop-Tart, that's a good one. And like,
you got to really heat up the mayo to make it liquefy a little bit more.
So hot mayo is good. But like we had a couple, you know, that one, then Tony the Tiger, like, did you see some of the commercials where like they're Frosted Flakes and they had like Cinnamon Toast Frosted Flakes, and then they had like Strawberry Milk Frosted Flakes. Like, they seemed like they're trying pretty hard.
That's rough.
But I haven't had Frosted Flakes in a while, but I used to like it, you know.
Yeah, I last had Frosted Flakes at some Fairfield Inn because it was like one of the few breakfast options available.
Oh, well, I always get Cinnamon Toast Crunch if you got that, but
they didn't have it.
But I like Pop Tarts. Anything with icing on it, I like. You know, Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, no, I know. You're like a small child.
I really have like 12 years. I mean, so many cookies over Christmas.
Maybe what's your favorite Pop-Tart?
Probably like the strawberry with the frosting.
Yeah, the strawberry with the white frosting and the little sprinkle dots.
It's pretty darn good.
It's hard to beat. I used to be a pure like cinnamon guy when I was a kid because it was basic, I would say. But then I expanded my horizons as a older teen, I would say, and did the strawberry ones. And then it's hard to go back from that. But I will say I probably haven't had a Pop-Tart of any sort. Well, I shouldn't say that. I probably haven't had a strawberry Pop-Tart in 15 years. Sad.
That is sad. I used to, when I was a kid, like I was like 15, working my first job like in a grocery store, we would get like 15-minute breaks, and I was literally probably still 6'3", but like 165 pounds, like super, super skinny. And I would get like a quart of whole milk and a box of Pop-Tarts, and that would be I would just chow that in a 15-minute break.
We've got breaking news in the chat. West Texas Mike says he's never had a Pop-Tart.
Never. You can remedy that, though. You can go to the store. Did you see that?
The ubiquitous breakfast item of lazy parents everywhere is feeding your kid a Pop-Tart, especially like 90s or 80s. Like,
yeah,
because you're not concerned with health. Like, come on, get out of here. Have a Pop-Tart, kid. Get the hell out of here. Go to school.
Isn't the whole breakfast thing like the health thing that was just like made up by like Kellogg. Well,
so So breakfast as a construct, like it's a complete social construct. Like I'm a full conspiracist about breakfast, where it's all just a capitalistic nightmare because, like, oh, all this stuff that's like, oh, specific breakfast foods. No, this is all horseshit. Like, why are lunch and dinner basically the same, but breakfast has to be this monstrosity of like eggs and insane carbs? And also the health thing, like, oh, you should eat a fulfilling breakfast. No, you should eat like a normal amount of food throughout the day and keep your energy up. And it has nothing to do with whether it's a breakfast or lunch or dinner. It doesn't matter.
I do love me some brunch and breakfast. I like breakfast foods. I do like it, but
you don't.
And we also have Chris, hasn't had a Pop-Tart either. Go eat a Pop-Tart.
Eat a Pop-Tart.
Yeah.
That's our dietary recommendation.
They're pretty good. Go eat a Pop-Tart. All right. Well, we're trying to keep this tight because I'm not feeling good and we're just already off the rails. There's David. Here, do that again. We'll, okay. So that's like the 13-minute mark. All right. I'll go find that and we'll, that'll be our screenshot. Okay. So we got to talk about three bowl games that happened and we're going to preview, two ones that are coming, up. So the first one, surprised a lot of people, I think. We had, unranked
USC Trojans
taking on number 15 Louisville in the Holiday Bowl.
These were the Cardinals. I guess we got to pick a new Pope. This was Wednesday, December 27th. Oh, no. I don't need to do that part. We're just talking about the game itself.
We're just talking about the game, yeah.
Woo, oh, boy. All right, so this is a game that I think both of us picked incorrectly.
And we both got this wrong.
Absolutely no reason leading up to literally the opening kickoff to think that what was going to happen ended up happening. I think your Connor Morissette tweeted before the game, USC, by my count, has like 53 scholarship players available for this game. But here's what I noted from the game, which was a pretty comfortable USC win. I mean, they looked pretty good throughout. Defensively, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't even great, but really flying around on defense, a lot more gang tackling, a lot more just playing with a great deal of energy on defense. And obviously, Danton Lynn wasn't calling the defense, but to think he didn't have maybe an impact, even if it was implicit, like these guys are auditioning for a role. This was a team that looked a lot more locked in than they've looked in months. So that was it on defense. And then on offense, I mean, the huge story was Miller Moss also maybe having some of that audition feel to him, going out there and playing an awesome game. I mean, there were a couple throws early where it was like, oh, the receiver made a great play. It wasn't necessarily a great throw. Like, I think his last four or five touchdowns were all throws basically into the end zone where he had to fit it into coverage or make a great tight throw over a guy.
His first touchdown was like a dump off to like Taj Washington, who ran in. His next five were all into the end zone, or I think the Deuce Robinson, he was like on the 3-yard line over his shoulder. Like, they were all touchdown passes, not screen passes, the guy ran in.
And so many things to be excited about. I mean, like Jacoby Lane, the connection they had in this one, and Jacoby Lane looking suddenly like, hey, when did Mike Williams show up back on USC's campus? There was a lot of, I think, reason to walk away from that game as a USC fan, pretty darn excited. Because Louisville, like, they were down some guys, but this was most of their team pretty intact coming into this game. You know, we saw them against Florida State. We've seen Jack Plummer play a lot of football. We know that they're not very good, but USC has looked like dirt for like a month of, well, the month of the end of the season.
Yeah.
To go out there without Caleb Williams, without, I'm spacing on the name of the running back.
Oh, Marshawn Lloyd.
Marshawn Lloyd. Without
Rice.
Marshawn Lloyd. Without so many of these
Caleb
guys.
Caleb Bullock. Yeah, like,
but like to have Taj Washington in his last game really show out, look great. Mekhi Lemon looking really good. Jacoby Lane looking really good. I mean, Deuce Robinson, I mean, homeboy has to figure out those hands because he is like, he took a ball, I think it was off the face where he had his hands here and the ball went here and bounced off his grill. But, you know, he's obviously a really, really talented player. But like, I think if you're a, if you're a USC fan and you were looking for like positive signs for next year, imagine all of what you saw with those guys flying around on defense. And, you know, again, it wasn't perfect. Like Louisville found some chunk plays. They did some like stuff, but it wasn't the secondary getting blown up the way it has all year. It was, you know, some chunk plays against, a defensive front that was limited by guys leaving and all kinds of stuff. But imagine all of that with a real defensive coordinator, with some of these additions that they've gotten in the transfer portal. You can start to talk yourself into this. And I don't want to get too out over my skis about Miller Moss, because it's one game in a bowl game. You know, things matter, but they also don't matter. But you were never going to see some of the backup quarterbacks that USC's had over the last decade do what he did in this game. And I think that's the most probably encouraging thing, because it wasn't just that he was making throws. It wasn't just that he was like, you know, his receivers were really helping him out. He was rolling out. He was making throws kind of off platform. He was doing some stuff that was like, and also like, just there were a couple plays where there was one play where he rolled to his right, and it was like, I think set up to be a screen to his running back, and it was Austin Jones, and it was not open. It was dead on arrival, and he just dirts it right at Austin Jones' feet, live to play another day. And it's like, that guy's had no reps basically at a college level, and he's doing the smart throwaways already. Like, that takes guys a long time to learn. Like, Dorian Thompson-Robinson wasn't smartly throwing the ball away until his third year as a starter. so it's like, you know, I think there's reason to be encouraged. Now, should USC still look and see what it can get in the transfer portal if there's a great, you know, quarterback available? Maybe, but I don't know. I think for continuity purposes, I think we're going to learn some things about the psychology of building a team. And I think a lot of times when you can build internally with a guy who has developed within the program and built relationships with a lot of guys in the program, not the worst idea in the world.
No, I agree. I mean, Lincoln Riley was asked about it afterwards, and he's like, hey, he might have scared quarterbacks away. Like, if you watch that terrible Ohio State game, Southern California kid Devin Brown starts, he gets hurt, didn't really look like he was all that interested in the game. If you're a transfer quarterback, you probably want to go to Ohio State. Do you want to go to USC where Miller Moss throws six touchdowns in the bowl game? I don't know. But I was kind of shocked by this. You don't really know the motivation coming in. They had 6 weeks off because they had a bye the last week, and they seem to take this seriously. All the guys that were out, dudes on defense, dudes on offense, I mean, they had a lot of opt-outs. No Caleb Williams, but, you know, he was still there, first guy cheering on Miller Moss and everything. And Moss has waited for this for a long time, so kudos to him. I mean, he's a really nice kid. Glad to see that he played well. But they blocked better. They tackled better. Like, their left tackle, Jonah Monheim, they moved him to guard, and they bring Elijah Page in to be the left tackle of the future. They kind of made some changes that probably made sense, and they just seemed to play together as a team. And, you know, there's a lot of guys. You know, Damani Jackson not there. Corey Foreman. All these five-star guys were gone, and they seemed to get better somehow. I don't know. But they had a lot of time to prepare for this. I'll give the coaches credit for using the 6 weeks off to actually prepare for the bowl game. Louisville had some guys on offense, but their defense was really good. And USC kind of shredded them after they had a three and out the first. It was 7-0, three and out first drive, give up a touchdown. And then after that, you know, they could have scored again. Miller Moss threw a pick basically going to the end zone that almost went the other way. But they tackled pretty well on defense. Like, they played good on offense. They didn't run the ball that much, but this was not the way they looked. And some USC fans were like, this is the more fun I've had watching a game like all year. And it kind of was. So it was just a weird situation, but it gives you some hope. Kind of like UCLA gets a bowl win. You know, you get a lot of hope for the future. Like, you're
going to be amazed at how I emerge from your screen like the girl in the ring and choke you out.
But it did.
You're going to see me crawling out of a sewer, and I'm going to be slowly approaching the screen, and you're going to think, oh, I'm safe because he's in the screen. But then suddenly I'm going to jump out and murder you.
Just saying, the levels of optimism in the LA schools have to be very similar.
We have breaking news in the chat, Ryan.
Oh, we do? Okay, let me.
From Jackson McCann. He super chatted us $9.99. Thank you so much, Jackson. He said, thanks for the great year. We really appreciate our listeners. You know, here at the end of 2023, you're all fantastic. We love you so much, and thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for watching, listening. I appreciate it, Jackson. Thanks for the super chat. That is awesome. But yeah, going in, I really didn't expect – I mean, I didn't get to go to this game because I came back and I was sick. So I was supposed to drive to San Diego the next day. So I watched this one from my couch. And it was pretty shocking result. I didn't expect that USC fans would have like some usually USC was doing well on the off-season stuff, the off-the-field stuff. Like, oh, they got all these great players and stuff, but then they go on the field and stink. They kind of had a great recruiting class, wasn't like killing the portal. And then they have like a good result on the field. So it was kind of like reverso. But it's giving the fans some optimism going into it. And Miller Moss certainly seems like a capable quarterback. So we'll see kind of what goes on with that.
For sure.
All right. So that was our the first game. The second game, we got to go to the Alamo Bowl. We got
Arizona Wildcats.
They're number 14 in the country, and they were taking on number 12, Oklahoma Sooners.
I guess we're here early. Let's steal some land. This was on Thursday. I mean, really just a comfortable, easy win for Arizona. I don't know why we need to talk about it anymore. They won by 14. It wasn't like they had to score 25 straight to win by 14, right? Like, that didn't have to happen, correct?
I don't think it was 13 points straight, followed by 28 points straight the other side, and then 25 points straight for Arizona again. So where Arizona just kind of disappeared. That didn't happen.
Yeah,
it was cruising when it was 13-0, I still was feeling like, uh-oh. Like, there's still – I just felt like Oklahoma was going to turn it on, and then they did, and it was like – it was 28-13, right? I think it was 28-13. I was like, well, at least David's going to go 0 for the day in picks. But then it came back.
Yeah, I should have. So earmuffs, Arizona fans, or listen if you'd like. I'm a big Jed Fish guy. I'm a big Arizona guy. They should have gotten their asses kicked in this game, but for 6 turnovers from Oklahoma. And the thing is, like, I've talked about turnovers a bunch, but like, they lost basically every fumble they could lose. Basically every time Arizona got its hands on balls, it picked it off. Like, this was what's called turnovers luck. This was an extremely lucky game for Arizona. Now, those games happen. And I don't mean to say, like, sometimes you can get a bunch of turnovers and you still lose because you're not executing. And Arizona did enough with those turnovers to win the game. But they, like, if you, it's one of those where you plug the stats into the end game and you're like, oh, Oklahoma should have won that game by 2 touchdowns. They didn't because they turned the ball over like a ridiculous thing. They had 562 total yards to Arizona's 383. It's hard to see. What is playing on my computer? God, I hate this.
What'd you do on your computer?
No. So ESPN,
you screwed something up there.
No. Side note. ESPN is the site I use when I am pulling up like the remaining like box score items that I need to reference as I'm talking. But here's the problem. They autoplay videos, but they do it sporadically. So sometimes it'll autoplay and sometimes it won't. And it really just depends on what the stupid video ad is. And then it started autoplaying while I was trying to talk. And I can't do 2 things at once. I can't listen and also talk. Not possible. And so I stop talking and I try to find the tab on my computer that's playing. And here's another side note. I'm one of those Google Chrome guys that has like 55 tabs open.
I have a lot of tabs.
So finding where I have this playing video, it's impossible. Anyway, Arizona, look, there's a ton to be excited about in a macro. I'm not going to focus too much on this game. Arizona won. They beat Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl. That is so cool. They won 10 games this year. That is so cool. Noah Fifita looked really good again on balance. There were some dry moments, but on balance. They did this without the running game really working at all. None of those guys could get much. You know, DJ Williams, Jonah Coleman, Michael Wiley, we've liked them. You know, Michael Wiley making his way back to the field. But none of them played particularly well. This was heavily reliant on Noah Fifita. And his connection with Jacob Cowing and Tedero McMillan was just – it is what it was all year. And those guys really performed when it mattered. So kudos to them. And, Arizona now, they go into the Big 12 having knocked off the Big 12 power from the last 20 years. You know, this is a changing of the guard. We've beaten the ass of Oklahoma. Now we will be the Oklahoma of the new Big 12.
Yeah, this was a really fun game to watch.
Yes.
And because we both got this right. Were we giving points or what was the spread on this one? This was
Arizona was favored.
Yeah, by a little bit. But you know, yeah. The way they've been playing later in the season, we're like, all right, and then come out right away. You know, they turned one turnover instantly into a touchdown, but they they were moving the ball, but then sort of like kicking field goals. And then the one turnover, they turned into a touchdown. It ended up being 13-0. You're like, all right. But you could tell like Oklahoma was moving the ball. You know, they had their freshman. So Gabriel was gone. He's at Oregon now. So Arnold, the freshman, was coming in there. And, you know, he did some cool things, but he was like a freshman. He was like Dante Mooring it up a little bit, right? Like he was turning the ball over, sort of like getting rid, you know, trying to make big plays, but also putting the ball in harm's way. And Arizona was able to kind of capitalize on that. And like Johnny Nansen and the defense, I thought they played well. But that stretch, when it was 13-0, the 28 straight points, it just looked like Oklahoma could run away with it at that point. And
24 straight
points. 24, I'm sorry, my bad. 24 straight points. Was it, what was the final score?
38-24.
Okay. So my bad on that. 28. I'm sick. Yeah. I'm going to blame it on that.
No, but, blame it on the sickness. Blame it on the sickness. It doesn't really work as much as alcohol.
No. But so that was, when that was going on, you're like, uh-oh, this is trouble brewing. But literally, Arizona got saved by turnovers when that was happening because they were still moving the ball. But then, you know, giving Arizona the ball back. And then, and for whatever reason, the offense wasn't working. I think they were trying to force it to T-Mac a little bit. And he was he was just a force. I don't know if you know, have his final numbers pulled up there, but he was a huge portion. What was his T-Max number?
He had 10 catches for 160 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big – and like you said, that's like half of Arizona's total yardage in this game. Like they weren't – but they were doing enough. I liked the way they were playing, and I think, yes, there's turnover luck, but they were taking – I think they were forced some of that too. Like you got to give Arizona some credit for some of that. But – this was I think Oklahoma is probably a better team on paper, and Arizona comes out and gets it. It's a big win. I think this is a good win for the outgoing of the conference. Certainly for Arizona going into the Big 12, where like you guys couldn't beat that team because we did when we're coming in here. And then stupid my mentions get all because the Oklahoma USC thing. I think College Football Reddit tweeted out that Brent Venables now has as many losses in his 2 years at Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley had it his 6 years or whatever it was. And they are all getting all mad at me. And they're like, and USC fans are going, oh, USC beat Arizona. Why couldn't Oklahoma? Yeah. So there was a lot of those like kind of parallels. Like I kind of want to leave that behind. Maybe that Caleb Williams is gone. Maybe this will kind of go away now. But yeah, there was like a lot, my mentions were kind of going crazy for this one, but super fun watch. Big, big win. Jed Fish, 10, you know, to go from one win 2 years later, whatever, to 10 wins, going into a new conference, beating the class of that conference. You know, kudos to Fish and Arizona. And Fifita looks great. You love, you know, I think there's a lot of optimism there. And the fact that the defense, you know, they added some guys from the portal, but they lost some dudes too, and their defense got a lot better this year. Kind of like what UCLA's did. USC's going to try to do the same thing next year. No, UCLA's defense got better this year. I'm not.
Yeah, trolling. I thought you were going into one of your famous trolls.
No.
Yes. No, the turnaround from UCLA's defense, it's certainly something you could project for USC. I'm reasonably confident.
But Arizona did it too, you know.
Yeah, Arizona is the classic very successful rebuild. Very bad to dangerous but mediocre to very good in 3 years. And I'm excited to see what the future holds. I don't think, you know, it's not always going to be linear. I don't know that necessarily next year they're going to win 11 games. You know, I think Jacob Cowing moves on. So they're going to have some guys to replace, but yeah, there's still a ton to be excited about there.
You have some advice. A dog's life in Portland. Note to David, look for the speaker icon on the tab where the video is playing on.
Yeah, that's easy when you have a normal number of tabs. But when you don't, I've got to like visually recognize across like 60 things on here.
Yeah.
But yes, thank you. That is good advice. I just, I knew that already. It's just, you know, having the visual acuity to find it among a bunch of color and X's is difficult.
But great win, Jed Fish, Arizona. Congrats. Really good one going into it. We got one more bowl game to recap. Didn't go as well for the Pac-12 or Pac-2 or whatever you want to say. But we had, I believe they were the number 19 ranked team.
Oregon State Beavers.
They were in the Tony the Tiger, not the Frosted Flakes, but the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl against number 16, Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Oh, give me my pot of gold. What was your favorite rushing yard for Oregon State in this game?
It came at the end. Your favorite third down conversion? Was that like, like literally, they didn't have a third down conversion until there was like less than 2 minutes left in the game. Like
they
how
had two rushing, they had two rushing yards in this game.
That one was pretty good though. That one rushing yard.
That one from DeShawn Fenwick. But I don't know. Maybe the other one from DeShawn Fenwick was also pretty good.
Do we know that Damian Martinez wasn't going to play when we previewed? Like,
no, I think it was announced. I didn't know that. That's not to say that it wasn't known, but I didn't know that. And if I had known that, I don't know that I would have picked this game the way I did. I did pick Oregon State stupidly. Last we left him, Ben Gulbranson looked about like this, and time has not been kind to him. he did not perform well. But I wouldn't blame really him or anyone on offense, though the offense was putrid and awful. They got smoked defensively by something called a Steve Angeli. We're going to check in on that. But I believe it was something called a Steve or Stev Angeli. Is that correct?
I think that's who that was.
In any event, he threw for 232 yards on 19 attempts, which isn't good. That's pretty bad. But then they also ran the ball for almost 250 yards. So they got smoked on both ends. And yeah, Oregon State was down a lot of guys. They're also down a coach. They're down a lot. But this, you know, in the way that like the USC game was, it drives some optimism. It makes you feel excited about next year. Like the existential dread that I'm sure is in the hearts of a lot of Oregon State fans, it only grows from a game like this where you don't look competitive. I mean, it was 32-0 at one point.
Yeah.
A hideous, hideous football game.
It was so bad.
It's like it's hard to like find good words to describe it. I mean, on one end, like Oregon State finished 8-5, and you got to feel good about that. Like just generally, I mean, it's not what you thought it was going to be preseason. If you were like an optimist about Oregon State, like I think my co-host was, but still a good season for Oregon State. But now you're staring at a cliff going forward, and it's just. I really wish they could have in their last competition as a Pac-12 team, well, obviously the Pac-2, but you know what I mean, been at least more competitive in this game, because this was just the hideous, hideous blowout.
It was. West Texas Mike said, wasn't there an offensive lineman who converted a two-point conversion? Yeah, that was like late in the game. You know what was weird? We talked about like the attrition. Notre Dame had a lot of attrition. You saw Sam Hartman and his
looks. That was what I was banking on. I was banking on both teams looking kind of assy, but like Oregon State's level of ass
was way assier,
was so higher than anything that was going on. Like a Steve Angeli came in.
Yeah.
Again, I've never heard of Steve Angeli. I'm not sure if that's a real person. That might be just a name generator. I don't know. But a Steve Angeli came in and looked better than Sam Hartman did all year, because he was going against an Oregon State defense that like looked borderline terrible.
I think Oregon State lost a little bit more. They had younger guys playing on defense than maybe Notre Dame did. I think both teams lost a lot on offense. You know, Estime, their best, Notre Dame's best running back was out. Sam Hartman, like literally was doing like play-by-play on the sideline. You know, they kept showing to him. I think Ty Hillenbrand from Solid Verbal was like over under on how many full, you know, shots of Sam Hartman do they show. And it was, I think he got up to like 10. They were showing him all the time. Good looking dude. Going to go to the NFL, whatever. But when you saw the first sort of series where, well, Oregon State got the ball and they did nothing. And then Notre Dame got the ball and they would like hand it off to, was it Love was the running back? I forget who it was, but he was kind of, you know, whatever. They had guys that could come in and play. And
the main running back was Jadarian Price.
Price, okay. And it was like, oh, pick up like 8 yards or something. You're like, all right, they can run the ball up the middle. They do it again. And then it was like your boy, the quarterback would just like roll out and like hit the tight end, like, you know, for 8 yards. And it just looked like, here's a play we're going to draw up that the guy will be open and the quarterback can make the throw. And they just kept doing that stuff. And they hit one big play down the field later. But it just looked like Notre Dame was, whatever the storm was of like opt-outs, they were able to weather it and sort of like, here's what we're going to put on the field. And it's going to be, you know, we're going to take a few ingredients away from you, from your menu. And you get the first couple courses, you're like, oh, this is still really good. That's fine. And they put out a really nice menu out there and they delivered on their meal. And what you saw from Oregon State was sort of like, we didn't have salt. We didn't have, like, they didn't have anything. And you weren't sure what the hell was going on. They just looked god awful. Couldn't do anything. Couldn't run the ball. It was not pretty. And then I thought Trent Bray would end up being the head coach. He wasn't the head coach for this game. They had an interim head coach, and it was, you know, he tried a horrible, one of the worst fake punts like you'll ever see. Just got it was tackled for a loss. It wasn't like, you know, it was just death. They got a safety trying to run the ball out of the end zone. I feel like that maybe hurt things more. I know Bray's got to assemble the staff and recruit and stuff, but when you're like, defensive coordinator is like not really part of the game plan because he's got to like plan for next year. He was still there, but not really there. You know what I mean? I think there was just too much for this team to overcome. And I felt really like as soon as I saw the first two drives, I'm like, all right, there's no way that Oregon State's going to cover. I was a little worried at the beginning, but it was like, all right, fine. But they just too much. There was too much gone player wise, but coaching wise, when you have the coaches gone and the weird situation that you kept Trent Bray for continuity, but he wasn't really part of this, you know, I don't know. Did you see that? Like, it didn't seem like he was even part of the game plan because it was like he was removed or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know the circumstances, the dynamics, but yes, that was very strange.
Yeah. So I think that not having like your future head coach, I mean, having Cole Branson, who, you know, won the bowl game last year and was, I think he was MVP or something. I think that could kind of help, but there was just too much missing. It just, you could just tell that they're just, you know, this was a chopped episode where the ingredients just, they were never going to make any sense. So you just couldn't do anything with it. And, yeah. So Notre Dame was just a more buttoned down team that you could lose a few pieces and kind of make things work. They still had a lot of continuity. There was zero continuity with Oregon State. So you feel bad, but this was not a game.
No, so, not a game at all.
So I feel pretty good that I got this one right, and this allowed me to tie you.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks. Cool. All right. Well, why don't we do – let's take a quick break. We'll come back and preview the games and maybe do a couple of questions. So back in a minute, everyone.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. I'm feeling like crap, David.
Are you feeling even worse than you were at the beginning of the show?
I'm okay. And if you guys are watching, I am sipping from my tea, which is helpful. I've been drinking a lot of tea lately. But no, I'm just, if you do anything for like an hour, you just kind of like get run down. You're like, okay, I gotta go back to the couch and watch bowl games. We have good games on today. Will there be some good games?
Depends on how you feel about the Orange Bowl. Florida State's going to be missing a bunch.
Yeah,
of
guys. The whole team is out. The Alamo Bowl, I think they said that was like the highest, the best as far as rankings go, like 12 and 14, Arizona and Oklahoma. Outside of the New Year's Six, like that was like the premier New Year's Six bowl. That was, I mean, another big win, you know, for Arizona for that one. But that was cool.
I'm going to be watching UCLA basketball versus Oregon at 1 o'clock.
Are you? USC? Yeah. Wait, USC UCLA women's team play today, right?
That's true. At 5 o'clock, I believe.
They're like number two versus number six. No,
everyone should tune into that one. It's going to be a really good game.
Is it on Pac-12 Network or what is it?
Hang on. UCLA USC women's basketball. Let's give people a little bit of information. All right. Dude, why do they make it so hard to look
up? That should be on like ESPN or something. Like it's like legit.
Yeah, hang on. They make it so hard to look up TV networks these days. Good God.
Oh, Mark says
I've got to click into so many things. It's on the Pac-12 network.
Yeah, so people can't really watch, but you know you've made it. Okay. USC and UCLA women's basketball. You know you've made it. Both undefeated. They're combined 21-0 or whatever. You know, big time. You know you've made it when there's people that actually want to watch this game and they can't because it's on the Pac-12 network. So now you've made it. Now you should feel like you're part of it. Like there's been so many of these other games, you know. We got some breaking news. Hugo.
Ooh, Hugo.
Yeah.
What a man. What a mighty fine man. Good morning, fellas. It is very rare that I have a day off and the blessed opportunity to chime in live. I'm trying to stay caught up with the Mikes and Colts. Fight on, and a shout out to Spoonful of Eric from Bro. Thank you, Hugo. What a generous day this has
That's
been.
That's really nice, Hugo. Thank you so much.
You people are amazing. We love you.
Oh, hey, we got Ahmad in the chat. He's like, so he's been covering USC women's hoops for us. It says Pac-12 Networks, and it's a sold out Poly Pavilion.
Yeah, no, this is crazy. And I was actually, because I can never go to men's or football. I was gonna get season tickets to take my kids to women's basketball this year, and I didn't.
You should have. They're
really
good.
Cool atmosphere to go to this game. Yeah, no, I should have. It was cheap. It's really cheap. Like if you are, this is my pitch. If you are into just kind of the sports experience generally, and you haven't necessarily followed a lot of women's basketball, I've actually watched some games now for the first time. It's a really good product. Season tickets are really cheap at most of the major West Coast schools, and I would assume at USC and UCLA as well. UCLA, it was like, I think you get season tickets for like $100 for like,
wow, that's good,
a seat for the entire season. So anyway, if you are interested, you might still be able to get some packages like that.
Nice. So I guess Ole Miss and Penn State are playing right now. Put that up there, 10-3 Lane Kiffin against James Franklin. So mm-hmm. Ole Miss is beating Penn State. So thanks, Ben, for pointing that one out. All right, we got two games to preview for the bowl games. We're going to start with the Fiesta Bowl. We got number 23, Liberty, and we have number 8,
Oregon Ducks.
You've screwed me up. All right, so Liberty is the Flames, right?
I don't know.
I think it's the Flames. Yeah, they're the Flames. Okay. All right, so the Fiesta Bowl, Monday, January 1st, ESPN, 10 a.m., number 23, Liberty. Ah, I'm Jerry Falwell, and I'm burning in hell versus number 8, Oregon. Oregon is a 16.5-point favorite. Yeah, I can't in good conscience pick Liberty. Liberty is a really good football program, though. Actually, I can pick them. I'm taking Liberty. Jamie Chadwell is a lord. He's really good at figuring out the whole offense thing. Is Bo Nix playing in this game?
Bo Nix is playing. I thought.
He is playing it. Okay.
Yeah, I thought he was playing.
I'm having a tough time with this because that's a huge spread. Liberty's offense, what they do is pretty impressive. They shouldn't be in this game, but there is like this thing where you win a lot of games, you get used to winning a lot of games. You know what I mean? Like it's breaking a team that wins a lot is hard to do because it's a team that has, and you take level of competition into account, but it's also just, that team wins a ton. Like they find a way to win games where it's, you know, it's because even a really dominant team is going to find games where they struggle. And for a team to consistently win the way Liberty has, it's hard to say like, oh, they're going to get just absolutely smoked in this game. So I'm taking Liberty.
Okay.
I'll have to do some penance for that. But I'm taking Liberty.
I think politically you would not take Liberty. I'm shocked at this. I'm going to take the Ducks. This is the situation where the Ducks play a team like this, they blow them out. And I feel like the motivation is going to be high. Not a great taste in your mouth, like losing to Washington, you know, having a chance to be in the playoff, have a chance to win the Heisman, all that gone. I feel like they're going to take out, fire and brimstone here on Liberty and just blow them the F out. Liberty hasn't played anybody good. They really have played nobody good. But the whole argument was that SMU should have been there because they played TCU and they played Oklahoma, I believe it was. Liberty hasn't played anybody. Ain't played nobody. And they're going to play somebody, and I think they're going to get boat raced. So give me Oregon. I didn't think we would go different on that one. So I'm call me a little shocked.
Dude, I'm approaching a streak. I want to see how many of these I can
you
lose.
You should, yeah.
Is it possible still for me to finish under 500 for the season, or is that gone?
No. We're both 10 games over 500.
Ah, geez. Okay, fine.
Liberty's 132nd strength of schedule, according to Ben. So
I don't give a shit. All right, give me Liberty or give me death.
We've seen bowl games where they're like struggling to score points, like teams not scoring 17 points. So I think in general, I would probably be taking a lot of unders and give me the points in some of these games.
Give me Liberty or give me death.
Yeah. But this one, I'm just like, I feel like Oregon can score in this one. So we'll see. Okay.
All right.
Do you want to do the thing and then I'll just play the sound effect, or I don't know how you want to do it. We got a Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, it's a Sugar Bowl. It's the playoff semifinal on Monday, January 1st on ESPN, 5:45 p.m. Number 3, Texas. What did we decide a Longhorn was? It's a type of cow.
It's a cow with horns, I guess.
Moo! I have horns. Moo!
They're long.
Versus number 2, Washington.
Washington Huskies.
Washington is a 4-point dog in this game. So here's the reason why I applied my logic to Liberty is because I intend to apply that logic to Washington.
Okay.
Washington doesn't have, let's be real, Washington doesn't have any business from a power rating standpoint, from a advanced analytics standpoint, from a talent composite standpoint, has no business being in a playoff. None. Like, they're a good top 15, top 20 program. They're not a top four program.
Are you hating?
But.
Your boy.
But.
Okay.
Kalen DeBoer just wins football games. My dude goes out there and he just beats ass. He wrecks shop. And he's been doing that for so goddamn long. Like, from fucking Sioux City, South Dakota, all the way through to Washington, to Seattle, Washington. How many games straight has that dude won? Isn't it like 21 now?
He's 22? I think they have the longest winning streak, because once Georgia lost, I think they have the longest winning streak in the, or maybe Florida State has it.
Yeah, dude just wins. He wins. He beats teams that are like more talented, which are like power rated higher, like Oregon. He beats them twice, and the second time pretty convincingly. I have a hard time picking against that. And I think Texas is really good. I think Sark has done a fantastic job. I think it's, it's hard to get excited about Sark, because I do think he's a little bit of a dick, but it's also nice to see a guy turn his life around.
Yes,
afforded a lot of opportunities to turn his life around because of the way the coaching fraternity is set up, but it is still cool to see a redemption arc, even if it is for a guy who's like, whatever, he's kind of a schmuck. But it's still nice to see from like a human angle to see somebody.
It's so great to see Sark, because you root for a guy like that who's a fucking asshole, and then it's backhanded compliment.
Asshole, but like, you still like to see somebody who goes from a schmuck and an asshole and having a bunch of other problems to just be a schmuck and an asshole by himself without those other problems. And to do all that while actually improving in his assigned profession is also nice to see. That being said, he's going to fall as all men fall to the might of DeBoer. Give me Washington.
Yeah, I've taken the 4 points. If it was like a pick 'em, I think I might take Texas, but 4 points, I'll take DeBoer and Washington. I think Texas' defensive line is probably going to beat the crap out of Washington's front a little bit. It was funny. Listen to Rick Neuheisel talk, and he's like, Kalen DeBoer, Michael Penix in an indoor environment. So they're going to play, it's like,
there's going to be some bombs.
Yeah, he could just throw. There's no like wind. There's nothing. I feel like they're going to be able to do some stuff. So I'm going to go with you on this one. I could see this being wrong. I could see Texas sort of just like out athleting them.
Texas has a lot more talent.
They have more talent.
It's a more talented team. And by rights, they're a justified 4-point favorite. But there's a reason Sark was 7-win Sark for a long time. And there's a reason Kalen DeBoer is like a fucking golden god. And it's because one just wins games and one occasionally finds ways to lose them.
Yeah. So big game. The 4 points, I'll go with you on this one. I'll take Washington. And so I'm rolling with both Pac-12 teams. So
we've got some breaking news in the chat.
Oh, let's go. Is it a West Texas
Mike? West Texas Mike. He has provided two West Texas Mikes. He says, this mobile slider dictates that amounts end in 99 cents anyway. Nearly two West Texas Mikes for Ryan to count down, not for the new year, but till he vomits.
Oh, I'm not a vomiter.
No, I don't vomit either.
I just have like a runny nose. I have like headache, runny nose, no fever. It's just basically like a cold.
I'll be honest. Like, when I'm really sick, this is going to be TMI, so earmuffs, everyone. But like, when I'm really sick, like with some sort of stomach bug, I don't vomit. I poo like a racehorse. And like a racehorse trying to climb uphill. Have you ever been on a hike where horses are, like, in the Sierras, and you see at the bottom of a hill before it's a long climb, you'll just see like a pile of horse crap?
They do it before they get on the climb.
Well, they do it like it's like an energy thing. I had it explained to me one time. Okay. But anyway, that's me when I've got a stomach bug. Nothing comes out this end, but everything comes out that end. So it's just a
I think I'm in the same
thing. It's a soul You know, it's a tabula rasa thing. It's I'm going to have an empty soul so I can be filled with the Lord. That's what I feel like after I have a stomach bug.
Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat as you. I'm more of that end. That
it's like when the great spiritual folks in early Christianity and, you know, Judaism would wander around in the desert because they would want to be emptied. You know, they would want to have their soul emptied so it could be filled with the Lord. That's me on a stomach bug.
Nice.
I like to think of it as my 40 days and 40 nights in the desert is me curled up on a bathroom floor.
Nice. Shitting. West Texas Mike wants me to vomit for the super chat. Like, you're going to give more than $10 to, first of all, vomit on command. Like, that ain't happening. but thank you for that one. Okay, so we made our picks. We both got Washington, and I took Oregon, and Dave is taking those 16.5 points and the Liberty Flames or whatever they are called. We are tied. We will not be tied after these two bowls, and potentially if Washington wins, we would have to pick one more. So if one of us is behind and Washington wins, we'll have one more pick to get in there. But good stuff there. Should we do some questions?
Yeah, let's wrap this up with some quick questions. Where do we start?
Now we for my Christmas favorite Day. Part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh God, this is always death.
Okay, our first question is from Ethan. It's UCLA Rock Bottom.
Okay.
So I'll handle this one. Do you want me to do all the reading today?
Yeah, I'm like, literally seeing the screen is not great.
Yeah, I'll take care of it. Okay. All right, this is from Ethan in Washington, D.C. UCLA Rock Bottom. Hello, gents. Question for David, and I guess Ryan, too, because it somewhat touches on USC. At this point, is it best for UCLA to hit rock bottom for them to turn it around? And to be clear, I don't mean to ask whether it needs to hit rock bottom, because I think we both agree they don't. Rather, at this point, in what you describe as a failed Chip Kelly regime, and given the apathy from the Morgan Center, perhaps the best thing for UCLA football is to go 4-8 next year and completely start anew, both from a football and a fan perspective. You could look at other schools in the Pac-12, which by all accounts have had successful runs the last two-ish years, who had to hit rock bottom to turn it around. Arizona had to go 0-5 in the COVID year and lose 70-7 to get out from under Sumlin, and look where they are now. Washington has gone 0-12 and then survived the Jimmy Lake disaster to now have a team in the CFP. USC dove to the depths under Clay Helton and arrived at a 4-8 record in 2021, which for USC is rock bottom. That led them to Lincoln Riley, who, despite your thoughts on his unwillingness to fire Alex Grinch, has SC on the right trajectory, generally speaking. So again, is a poor 2024 season, which leads to a clean slate for UCLA football in 2025, maybe not the worst thing in the world. Thanks for all you do. Ethan. Ethan, I think you're 100% right. I think from a fan angle, you got to decide what you're comfortable doing, what you want to root for, all that kind of crap. You know, some people are comfortable rooting for losses. Some people are not. Some people are more like, you know, it's got to be, you know, I'm a fan first and I got to root for my team and the whole thing. But I think there's a real angle where unless UCLA has a horrible season, is there any guarantee that they're going to fire Chip Kelly? Like, unless it is an abysmal, cataclysmic 3-9, 4-8, are they going to fire him? Are they going to fire him if they go 6-6? And you might think they should. You might think that's the obvious decision, but they failed on the obvious decision this year. So there's no guarantee they're not going to fail on it again next year. So from a, you know, you want to start anew in 2025, well, first you have to actually have the prereqs to start anew. And for that to happen, Chip Kelly would need to be fired. And for that to happen, like, how do you guarantee that at this point? It's with a certain amount of losses, and it's a certain amount of losses, probably more than six. So I think there's like a lot of hard stuff that, this is something that I kind of, talked about before ASU, this year, but it's the decision-making from an athletic administration should never put fans in a position where they have to think these sorts of thoughts, like where they have to think like, do I want my team to win? Or do I want them to lose so that they'll be better in the future and I can feel more comfortable watching them win? You know, it's this, and it sounds very convoluted. And look, let's all take a step back. Sports are insane. Why are we even having this conversation? Like, this is all stupid. Like, who gives a shit? But when we're inside of it, when we're inside of the irrationality of a sports fan, you start to think these thoughts, and it's like, it doesn't really matter who you root for, what happens, because you have no effect on the outcome of the game. But our brains don't think that. So I think when you're talking about like UCLA's administration has made it a bad experience to be a fan of UCLA football right now. And that's just the long and the short of it. And it's not even really Chip Kelly's fault. He's, you know, either doing his best or he's not. It doesn't really matter, but he's out there doing a specific job. But the people above him, Martin Jarman, whoever, their job is to evaluate that program and make the appropriate decision at the appropriate time. And the thing is, it would have been a bold decision to fire Chip Kelly after 2020. It would have been a bold decision to fire him after 2021. It was the necessary and right and proper time to fire him after this season, fire him in November of this season. And that they didn't is what is causing this like cognitive dissonance in the fan base, because you just don't see that. You don't see a coach not fired. The last time that was even like remotely similar was Clay Helton after, what was it, 2019? Which was the year, the first year where they were really bad. 2019, I think it was.
I mean, maybe it was 2018, or was that?
Whichever one it was. Yeah. But after the season, Lynn Swann had to release a statement saying, we sucked in all these areas, we needed to improve in all these areas. And they improved a little bit the next year, so it was like fine. But UCLA is not even acknowledging that it was a bad season. Like, they're not even acknowledging that this was subpar and that it's a bad culmination event for 6 years of Chip Kelly and all this other stuff that, like, it's just making the fan base, I think it makes them crazy. Like, it makes you think, well, okay, none of this matters, and why would I even bother being a fan anymore? And I think the way some fans stay engaged when things are awful is by continuing to watch the team and hoping they lose, which is a horrible way to be a fan.
Yeah.
It's a horrible experience, but it's a lot of people, and it's how they stay engaged. And I don't think you can necessarily denigrate that if they're remaining engaged. But anyway, that's a long, convoluted
counterpoint, Ethan. You know, you got the victory bell back. You beat your rival. You win a major bowl game. You won a bowl game in the most expensive stadium maybe in the world. Okay. You won a bowl game in that, a $5 billion stadium. That's your last – you got like 9 months of that to like live off of. So I think, you know, it's only up. Looking for extensions, not firings. That's what I'm looking for. Something to be said to be winning in the most expensive stadium in the world. So
next, I'm just saying. Frank in Sacramento. No questions here. I love it when something that is I love it when something that is new to most people is old information to me. PBS American Experience did a documentary first aired in 2016 and narrated by the actor Oliver Platt called The Boys of 36. It recounts the tale of the 9 University of Washington rowers who found glory at Hitler's Olympics using archival footage as well as interviews with surviving family members of the crew. George Clooney must have seen it as well. There was also a book that has been on assigned reading lists for high schools for a long time. So it could have been that too. But yes, thank you, Frank.
I'll do a YouTube one real quick. Dog's Life in Portland. Any comments on the catapult investigation? So I was just seeing this on Twitter, I think yesterday. I think Dan Wetzel was talking about it where, you know, it gives you all the data and there's footage from practice for like tells you like if David's running around practice, like how many miles he ran and all this, you know, all his data. Well, apparently some school had stole some of that, or look at that getting in there. And it wasn't Michigan. And then a lot of people are insinuating it was Ohio State. Some fake accounts came and said it was Ohio State. Did you see this at all? Any thoughts on that? Or
nope, don't care.
Okay. Sorry, Dog's Life in Portland. I just read like what a little bit from Wetzel. He does a good job.
I read a little bit. It sounds like some other team was getting illicit information. Don't care. It's all part of the game.
Okay.
Also, you don't need that much information. Like, it's all stupid. Like, oh, yeah, I need to know how many miles per hour my guy runs. No, time him on a 10-yard dash. That's the only information you need. Never. The only thing Catapult is good for, like all the like where they wear the little bras on,
yes,
is injury prevention. Like that's what it's good for. But like for scouting purposes, like if you can't see that guy is fast from watching the fucking game, then you've got a problem. You do not need to see that he runs 21.5 miles per hour. Okay.
Nice. Anyway,
moving on. All right, we got one last one from Ethan. The other one was spam and malware. ACC equals butt. Fellas, another question. On a scale from one to butt, how butt is the ACC? I'm not even a Trojan fan, but the 5th/6th best team in the Pac-12 with the second coming of Ricky Town at QB dominated the ACC's second best team. Should we have known that any team with Jake the Snake Plumber as its starting quarterback was going to be butt? Probably, but here we are. Might Stanford/Cal have a chance next year? Ethan in DC. You're asking the right questions, Ethan. This has been two just banger questions from Ethan because he is asking the right questions. Yes, the ACC is ass, has been ass, and everything that you heard about the Pac-12 for the last like 5 years, oh, the Pac-12's horrible, Pac-12 should die, all this other shit. It's the ACC that you should have been saying it about, but they were covered up by like a Clemson umbrella.
Yes.
And the Clemson umbrella masked all of the putrid feces underneath it. But there is nothing but feces in that league outside of the Clemson, like two national titles in 3 years, 6 years ago. All of it is ass besides that. And yeah, they've got Florida State now, but they've basically exchanged positions. Clemson and Florida State, the only two programs with a pulse ever in the last like 15 years of the ACC, and they basically exchanged. Now Clemson sucks. Florida State's pretty good. One team. And if the Pac-12 had had USC behaving like USC for the last 10 years, instead of having USC fucking maintain Clay Helton for so long, the Pac-12 would be an ongoing concern and the ACC would have blown up. The ACC sucks. Cal and Stanford, you're going to be middling, I think, but you're going to be right there in the suck. You're not going to be at the bottom of the suck. You are going to be like mid-tier, maybe even the closer to the top of the shit pile under one of Clemson or Florida State.
Clemson got a big win against Kentucky yesterday. Miami lost. You remember, like, Jack Plummer a year ago threw for over 400 yards against USC. So, like, literally. So that's another reason we picked USC. Like, well, we saw Jack Plummer against USC last year, and he destroyed them. And he was not a good quarterback, and he destroyed USC.
Yep.
With, like, a lot of opt-outs and everything. And he did not. He did not destroy USC this time.
Pac Plummer.
West Texas Mike wants to know if USC and UCLA should always play in the Rose Bowl and split the tickets 50-50.
Why? The Coliseum and the Rose Bowl are basically the same thing. Like, it's just a big ass bowl that's old, and
they were how weird is it that they were both built in like the 1920s, early 1920s or whatever. Like, they're both, 100 years old. There wasn't, like, 100,000-seat stadiums weren't, like, common. And Southern California had two of them in, like, 1923. It's insane.
I mean, if you wanted to every year have it at the Rose Bowl and, like, dictate a time, like it's 2 p.m., like the Rose Bowl game or whatever, I'd be cool with that because that's a really cool experience of, like, you know, the sunset and all that kind of stuff. But just to have it there and then it's dictated by television times the same way everything is. I mean, there's no difference between a noon game at the Rose Bowl and a noon game at the Coliseum. You're still going to sweat your balls off. And there's no difference between a 7:30 game at the Rose Bowl and the 7:30 game at the Coliseum. You're still going to freeze your balls off. So, they're two big ass bowls that aren't actually a very pleasant experience to watch a game.
John says, I still feel for Oregon State and Washington State. We both do. Not encouraging seeing what happened to Oregon State in the end, but, you know, both programs are going to have to kind of go forward now. They've got their schedule. They got some revenue. They've got control of what's left of the conference. It's not going to be an easy road, but we'll be here to follow it, and we'll probably be the most sympathetic towards those two programs than anybody else. Like, if Cal's just getting, you know, destroyed by, like, Boston College or something, we're like, you kind of did this to yourself. But if Oregon State's like losing to Nevada, then you're like, ugh, that sucks, you know?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to wrap things. Huh?
Let's be done.
Yeah, let's be done with this. We do appreciate everyone tuning in live on our YouTube channel. Thank you for the super chats and thanks for hanging with us. And if you're listening across the podcast platforms, we do appreciate that as well. Tell your friends. We got two more games left. Do some recap. We'll do some season recaps. We'll do some deep dives. We'll do all kinds of off-season stuff. It'll be a lot of fun. And we'll continue to cover these 12 teams, at least for the next season. We'll figure out how that all is going. But for David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.